Hello and welcome to this podcast produced by the Northern Region of the University and College Union. My name's John Bryan and we're releasing this episode on the 8th of March. Now, every year the 8th of March is celebrated across the world as International Women's Day, an opportunity to draw attention to the struggle for women's rights. You can find out more information about what UCU does in their campaign at ucu.org.uk/IWD. Now, in this episode, I'll be speaking to Dr. Sarah Hughes. Dr. Hughes wrote a paper recently called Wait for a Permanent Contract. The title came from the advice that she'd been given that she should wait for a permanent contract before trying to conceive a child. And I'll be speaking to Sarah a little bit later on. We'll also be speaking to the Equality Officer, Victoria Murray, from UCU at Northumbria University.
International Women's Day has taken place on the 8th of March for over a century. The day is a global celebration of the social, economic and political achievements of women. It's a global event where people come together to champion women's rights, female empowerment and gender equality.
International Women's Day is a powerful symbol of the fight for equality. It is rooted in the struggle for rights in the workplace and the demand from women for a better deal. There remains many places where the lack of political and economic rights means women continue to be second-class citizens, while even here in the UK, to be female in the 21st century means you are likely to be paid less and have a higher chance of facing discrimination. International Women's Day was born from the activities of women in the labour movement at the turn of the 20th century in North America. It quickly spread to Europe. Every year on the 8th of March, International Women's Day is celebrated across the globe. It's a day to recognise female achievement and a call to action, encouraging everyone to stand up for women's rights and gender equality.
2021's theme for International Women's Day this year is to choose to challenge.
So, Wait for a Permanent Contract is the title of the paper by Dr. Sarah Hughes, and it's also the advice that she was given by friends and colleagues in relation to starting a family. I asked her to outline the key themes from her paper and any kind of takeaway points that we needed to think about in the coming months and years.
Thanks, John. Yeah, so I had a paper published a couple of weeks ago in Environment and Planning C that was called Wait for a Permanent Contract and looked at kind of the politics of fertility as an early career researcher in the UK Academy. And this paper came from advice I'd had a wide spectrum of colleagues, friends, more senior colleagues, but also PhD students and other early career researchers. To wait until you got a permanent contract before you started trying for a baby. And obviously, that advice is coming from a really good position. It's like it's coming from a kind and kind of considerate perspective, right? People are trying to help you by giving you this advice. But I argue in this paper that I think we need to push back against this kind of binding of our fertility to the neoliberal academy, and look at some of the kind of structural issues that today are facing early career researchers across higher education. So that's things like the proliferation of short-term contracts and the expectation of institutional mobility, which I found that impacts many of us when we're planning for a child. So my research is limited in that it doesn't look at adoption or surrogacy. It reflects the fact that I'm a white heterosexual individual in a relationship with someone else who's got a permanent member of staff at Northumbria. So it's not looking at kind of other ways of, in which fertility is navigated in the academy. But I wanted to make the point that we need to think further about how the conditions of our workplace impact upon our abilities and decisions as to when to kind of start trying for a child. So a couple of things that came out of my research were that we assume that kind of waiting is linear, right? That if you wait now, you will get a permanent job in the future. And that kind of reproduces this kind of meritocratic myth in the academy that those of us who kind of like survive and ride out this instability will be rewarded with a permanent job. And we know that's not the case. We know that this kind of the instability for early career researchers further exacerbates inequality and pushes people without the kind of middle class safety net out of the academy. It also assumes that our fertility is known to us, that we can and we will make a rational decision when to decide to start trying for a child. So this impacts things like people that I know who've had applied for grants or short-term contracts, who've been successful and therefore decided to put family plans on hold because they're on a short-term contract, or even had abortions because they're on short-term contracts. And these things, I think, are endemic to the kind of short-term contracts of the neoliberal academy, and the expectation that we move around universities before we settle on a permanent kind of place. So the reason that I wanted to talk about this paper today was because I tweeted it, as we're meant to do with papers, to tweet them. And it got a lot of feedback. It got over 600 likes and 300 retweets. And I was shocked at how much this resonated with other people. And I think that that's one of the things I wanted to do with this paper. And it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you about today, is that this is something that is known but not discussed, right? Like, we know that for those of us who've come through kind of a PhD system, we often are kind of settling into a permanent job, if we're lucky, after years of navigating short-term contracts. And that might be in our kind of mid to late 30s, when the chances of conceiving a child naturally, kind of quote unquote, are declining. And I think this is a conversation that we need to be having with management in universities about how we think about this. The final point I wanted to make before I stop is that this also has implications for parental leave policies and the disparity across higher education around that is something that is increasingly being discussed. But I think it's something that's also compounds this kind of this decision making, which falls on predominantly upon women.
So if I come to you, Victoria, just listening to what Sarah's been saying, I mean, you're the equality officer for UCU. What are your kind of experiences at the university of dealing with members and of seeing members of staff and the sorts of things that Sarah's kind of drawing out in her research?
Thanks, John. Well, I think the first thing I'd like to say is, having come across Sarah's paper and read it, how grateful I was that she's taken the time to really talk about these issues and raise awareness, because I think it's true what she says, that they are known, but they're not always talked about. It's a bit like at the other end of the spectrum, menopause, that's not very often talked about. There's still quite a lot of stigma attached to that. But certainly in my role as a quality officer, and indeed any equality officer, will be dealing with the things that Sarah's touched upon there. And of course, the issues are once a person does decide to start a family, my role tends to have more involvement with how then they are supported to do that. So I'm really interested to see things, for example, like the fact universities and organisations within HE tend to have, for example, IVF treatment policies. But again, they're very sporadic in terms of how much time off is given and who's covered by it. So sometimes you need minimum levels of service before you're entitled to time off if you're getting treatment. Sometimes the policy doesn't cover the partner and support the partner in that way. Parental leave, as Sarah has said, so whether that be maternity, paternity, adoption, again, real progress needs to be made on that, in my view. Now, I would say recently the Athena Swan has been a big driver for improving parental leave in higher education. But my own perspective is that it shouldn't take a charter for an organisation to do the right thing by its staff. And I guess just putting things in the present, we've really seen how where parents, in particular women, have been impacted by the pandemic. And there's been some work done by the TUC, which suggests that 2 in 5 working mothers who have young children are struggling to find the childcare that they need. And such is the brunt of this, that it is really putting a lot of pressure on mothers in particular, but parents more broadly and carers more broadly, in terms of how they are able to function in the workplace.
And Sarah, one of the things that UCU's done a lot of work on is about the precarious nature of much employment in higher education. But I don't think has really kind of considered some of the issues that you were looking at. So is there anything there that we as a union can learn from, you know, the work that you've done?
So I think there was a fantastic report that came out a couple of years ago by Nick McGoran and Olivia Mason at Newcastle University that's called Second Class Academic Citizens, The Dehumanising Effects of Casualisation in Higher Education. That's a UCU report, and it's a fantastic report that really unpacks some of the structural issues that I look at in much more detail. And in that report, they comment on the fact that lots of kind of a UCU survey of casualisation in UK academia found that precarity made planning for a family harder. And so what I've tried to do in this paper is to bring some kind of my own experiences, but also reflecting on anonymous colleagues and ex-colleagues and people I've come to know experiences as well. So what I think the UCU could be doing more of is it's threefold, really. It's one, it's continuing to challenge short-term contracts. It's pushing for funders and universities to think about the implications of parental leave in short-term contracts. I have so many friends who've been impacted by this, who have been on short-term contracts, who get pregnant, and then they have no job to come back to, and some of them leave academia. I think that's appalling. And I think that's something the UCU could do a little bit more on. And I think the final thing is this just pushing for the parity in parental adoption leave across universities. There's a big split between the Russell groups and the post-92 universities here. I think a lot more could be done to address that. I'm thinking about Northumbria's maternity leave policy, which is, and parental paternity leave policy, which is, as I've said before, very, very poor compared to the rest of the sector. But I also think this kind of, this continues beyond the kind of the parental leave and deciding to have a child into wider kind of issues around promotion and kind of having subsequent children and kind of the expectations of work within and work commitments within the university.
And Victoria, if I come to you, are there any things that you want to pick up from what Sarah's kind of outlined as some of the things that UCU could spend a bit more time on in the next coming years?
Well, I mean, certainly speaking from a branch perspective, we've spent quite a lot of time trying to improve just the family-friendly policies. And I know that will be true across other organisations within HE as well. But yeah, I think the thing that we still haven't got quite right is in terms of how well women are represented in leadership positions. To put it bluntly, we are underrepresented in leadership positions. And I think this is something that is being looked at now. And it's something that we really need to be paying attention to, not least because if we look at the statistics and the makeup of our undergraduate students, then the majority of undergrads are women. But when you look at the academics who are teaching those women students, you've only got about a quarter of women professors. That figure just plummets when you look to see how many Black women make up the professoriate, for example. And it's just a real anomaly because if you look at the number of women vice chancellors, for example, there's been a slight increase over the last 5 years or so, where we're now roughly at around about 30%, I think, of women vice chancellors. But yeah, you know, if women are making up half of the world's population, why have we got these skewed figures? It's still far from balanced. So I think there's absolutely more that UCU, but also that institutions need to be doing in supporting women when they are looking to be promoted. Because we just need to ensure that the diversity of the faculty is representative of its workforce. And I would suggest that, I think, across HE, not talking about any institution in particular, but across HE, there is still a lot of progress to be made there.
Well, thanks very much then to Victoria Murray and to Dr. Sarah Hughes for talking to us on International Women's Day. Hashtag choose to challenge is the theme of International Women's Day this year. And I think that's very apt that both Victoria and Sarah have talked about challenging and changing the status quo. Sarah's paper in her conclusion talks about it doesn't have to be this way. Just because things have always been this way, we can still challenge and change them. And that's a very apt message given the theme of International Women's Day. Thanks for listening to our podcast. Please don't forget to like, favourite or subscribe in whichever app you use. Simply search UCU Northern Region and make sure you never miss any of our episodes. You can find Sarah Hughes on Twitter, Sarah_Hughes90, and you can also find Victoria Murray, the Equality Officer, at UCU Northumbria. Thanks for listening. See you next time.